welcome to all the important stakeholders, and maybe for honourable members' party that we should actually just look at the programme. There are a few things. One actually thought we should look at under the government business, the committee business, I mean, if we can be able to actually just accommodate a few issues. I think there's a standing committee on finance. The thing that's a bit unfortunate, dealing with the sign-off issues. We obviously are the committee which is quite strategic to be able to attend and actually be part of their program as a way of support. So I think we will actually just check when we finish if they're still sitting. It might be helpful just to encourage members of the committee to be able to actually attend. It's E249. When we finish, it's at E249. That's where they're actually meeting. The second point we may want to look at is issue relating to the committee program. The committee program in terms of what we need to look at in the coming week. So I thought, let me just say for the committee business part, there are a few issues we would like to talk to. But for now, can I welcome everybody who's here? And in the agenda we have, just check if ever there are any apologies. The only one I've got is about Member of Parliament, Ms. Yako. I'm not sure if ever there are any other apologies. Herman?
Chairperson, I'm not sure the Honourable Mutahung has had a family bereavement, and I know it was a leave form was processed to the Chief Whip's office, but it didn't include today, but I don't know, it was dependent on her flight, and I don't see her here with us today, but she's had a family bereavement.
We will note that as well. I think it will be quite important that we do. Outside the two apologies we have received, can we then proceed to look at the agenda? I have added those two issues. I wanted just to check if ever there's any issues the committee members would like to actually highlight or look at in the agenda, because the agenda as it stands, we do actually have the status of the report by the DTI, the DG, and the team from it's here to be able to speak to us on the presentation reflected on the screen. And I think mainly that will be the issue that we look at. If the committee is comfortable, then we'll be able to look at that, unless there are other issues. Yeah. Okay. Can we then look at the adoption of the agenda with those changes? Okay, Buyane.
Chairperson, good morning. I rise to adopt the agenda as it is, with the amendment made.
May we check from the other members if ever that's in order to second that? Okay, Herman.
Chairperson, I second the agenda as presented with amendments.
So I think maybe moving to the committee business, I think the first one was the Standing Committee on Finance. So I'm not sure if ever there's any comment from members on that one. If ever there's none, it's actually quite important that we give that support. The second issue I was referring to would be the issue of the National Credit Amendment Act. We did actually have a discussion as a committee. We actually also communicated with the minister. I'm sure the department did actually pick up on the issue. Lastly, I think what may be important is that we did actually have our memorandum. So there's a short one. I'll just read through for members. just to get sense, give sense of actually the meeting that we're actually referring to. Our committee meeting was on the 21st of August. The memorandum we actually were looking at was around the committee bill, because it's our bill as a committee. And in the memorandum, I think there are a few issues we actually highlighted, that we did actually receive notification on the 15th of August about the bill being assented or signed by the 13th of August, signed by the president. And the development of the bill was actually the committee, which also requested that the Department of Trade and Industry commission a socio-economic impact assessment study, SAIS report, on the potential impact of the bill. So I think in the previous meeting, we did actually have the issue highlighted. It did come to my attention that this process has been finalized, and I intended to write to the minister requesting the department to brief the committee on its content, to provide us with a copy thereof, and brief us on the implementation plan for the Act going forward with the committee concurrence. I wish to inform the committee that the minister has acceded to this request and will brief the committee on the National Credit Amendment Act, including the CS report, on Tuesday, the 10th of September, 2019. Further, I wish to also reiterate that the CS report, although requested by the committee, is a product of the Department of Trade and Industry, because you actually had to do the job as a department at the request of the committee. And also wish to bring the committee's attention that there are actually issues that we may have to look at as reference to be able to actually process the implementation on the side of the committee. And I also wish that the committee attention should actually be focusing on the following terms of the rules: 189, publication or disclosure of proceedings, evidence, reports, etc. Rule 189.3, for the purposes of sub-rule 1, a document is officially before the committee or subcommittee when the chairperson places the document or permits the document to be placed before the committee or subcommittee. A person appearing before the committee or subcommittee as a witness or to make the representation presents the document to the committee or subcommittee. Given the above, any information and report relating to the National Credit Amendment Act shall be placed before the committee on Tuesday, 10th September 2019. I thought it was quite important that I make this announcement. We've also had some discussion. I think, McPherson, it will be fair for me to actually refer to you as a member of the committee, but I'm sure in terms of our communication, if I talk to you, it's not an issue for the committee. And when we are in the committee, we don't actually have issues as individual outside the committee. So I thought it would be good that one just presents the issue in the way I'm actually doing, so that at least we are able to go through the process properly. So because I've actually mentioned your name, I think you're within your right to just speak to me through the meeting.
Sure. Thank you very much for the opportunity. And to be perfectly frank, this has been nothing short of a cat-and-mouse game of trying to obtain a report of which the committee requested the department to undertake. I have still to date been unable to ascertain as to when the report was undertaken, when it was finalized, when it was submitted to the presidency, when it was submitted to yourself as the chair. And I think that every member of this committee has a right to that report, as in fact articulated by the Director General himself on the 18th of July, when he said that I am clearly entitled to a copy of the report. Now, I don't know what is so secretive or so distressing to any member of the committee or the department that I would not be able to receive the report. And in fact, I think that because it is in fact a committee bill, it is unthinkable that we would have to wait for a member of the executive to present a report that we had asked for into our own bill. That's completely nonsensical, actually. And so we sit now at the at the discretion of the minister to present this report. And I really want to continue to register my strongest objections to the process that has undertaken. I have every right to access that report. It has been paid for by taxpayers' money. We have oversight as members of the department. And if there is a report that has been commissioned and, in fact, submitted to the presidency, this committee has a right to that report unhindered by the availability of the minister to present it. So I think that the process is wrong. I think that we should not have to wait for the minister to present it. In fact, the person who should be presenting it is the DG himself, as this committee commissioned or requested the department to undertake that. And so I think it's wrong, and I want to continue to register my strong objection and dissatisfaction to the way that this matter has been handled. And I will be certainly considering my options going forward in this regard.
I thought it would be important for the member to express himself, because it's in the same communication I had with him, because I thought he was a member of this committee as well. But I think he does actually express a view that as an individual member of parliament, he has a right. And I think on the other side was the point that the report is generated and is a report of the department. And I think on the process that we have engaged in the discussion I've had with him, so I thought it will be good so that we don't actually then suppress the member on his views. But next Tuesday, the 10th, in the approach we have taken, when we agreed on the memo, you were not present in the meeting. You had other issues which were more important than the meeting at that point, from what I understood. So the committee agreed on a memo, and the process I'm announcing now is the agreement of the committee. So the committee might be wrong, but I think you, within your right, next Tuesday when we discuss, to be able to actually raise that issue and see if ever we can be able to confirm as the committee what's the proper way we should have done dealing with the issue. But for now, the committee did take a decision. I'm following up on the memo of the 21st August meeting. We are meeting on the 10th. We will actually be processing the issue before us. If I can actually then proceed, because I think that's the point which I wanted to just raise. Thank you, McPherson. And maybe the other points we'll actually have to deal with outside the meeting, or the next meeting might actually help us with the guidance of the member of what we should have done. I think more than half of us are members who have just come to Parliament. And I think he is the only member in this committee who actually was part of the previous term complete. And I'm sure we will be learning a lot from him. But I think it will be important that he gets a bit patient with us, because we may not be as effective as him at that space. Thank you very much. Can we take the next area? Oh, okay. Oh, Mantashe, Mabuyane Mantashe were members of the previous committee. So maybe I can take your comments, both of you, and then we can actually then proceed to the next item.
No, thank you, Chair President. Good morning. Now, Chair, because we had made an agreement, we had agreed as a committee, as you say, I just rise to be on record that this was a decision of the committee of the 20th of August that would have this report presented to us. It is not your own thing. It is a committee resolution. And thank you, Chair.
The 21st of August, yeah, we did have a memo agreed by the committee. Buyane, want to comment?
No, thank you very much, Chair. I think we are online in terms of the report. Just that MacPherson has a right as well as a member to check as to what are the processes moving forward. But we took a resolution, we are moving, and on the 10th we'll be meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It is last time MacPherson, Mbuyane, Mantashe. So that's our committee members who actually are more elder and who would actually be the ones that really advise. Can we proceed to the next item?
Just as a point of clarity.
Can I do this? Can we proceed to the next item? If we need to carry on another issue, we can talk outside the meeting. But for the meeting,
I just wanted to clarify that I am the oversightsman of this committee. Because I was here from 2014.
You're trying to express still, you're saying you are older than the space that I'm giving you, more qualified, even better than what I actually expressed. So I'll apologize, I move it to 2014. Is it 2014? Ah, makes him more experienced than most of us. Okay. Ah, okay. No minister, just a shadow. Okay. Now can we then proceed to the next? Cabinet?
Thank you, Chair. I may be jumping the gun, but can I please make a request? Can our committee secretary please send out his wonderful invites to us up until the end of the term, then at least we've got them settled. If you wouldn't mind doing that, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you, Chair.
They will be speaking to that, MacPherson Cuthbert. Thank you very much. The next item on the agenda, we do have the DG. I think in the wall, we actually have properly captured introduction as well, DG. But I think the missing part is actually advisor to Minister, Mr. Harry, so that we can actually then allow you, DG, to invite your team or introduce your team. Welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Thanks for the invitation to the department to brief you on this important industry. As indicated, our delegation is, the person who will do the presentation is Kumisa Plata Maluli. She's the Chief Director for Agro-Processing. And then Dr. Annalyn Chetty, she is our Acting Deputy Director General for Industrial Development. And then Harold Harvey, don't know if he's finished his doctorate yet, but he's a special advisor, especially assisting with the poultry and agro-processing industry. He's got vast experience on both sides of the divide, both on the trade union side and on the business side. Chair, I'm going to just give the background, and then I'll hand over to Visa. To take us through the detailed presentation. Honourable Chair, this issue has a very long history, and this sector, and there's two big issues with the sugar industry. The one issue is the one of transformation and participation of black farmers within the industry. As you know, as part of the rest of the agricultural sector, historically, this has been a very well-organized and well-regulated sector. But obviously the associations, the South African Sugar Association, the Growers Association, was obviously exclusively white. So the biggest issue we've been dealing with, and we'll get the full detail, but basically black farmers have not been represented, so we've been dealing with the issue of transformation and participation. Currently we have a transitional arrangement where now black farmers are fully represented within the South African Sugar Association. But that is an interim arrangement where we were given guidance and instruction from Parliament, who had a number of hearings, I think, during Honorable MacPherson and Mantashe and Mabuyani's time. They gave us clear guidance on how to deal with this issue of transformation. I want to thank them for their guidance. But let's say there's now stability in that. But that transitional arrangement comes to an end in the first quarter of next year. And therefore, the big issue is this. We need to finalize that matter or we must come up with a permanent arrangement around transformation. The second issue is the state of the industry. The industry is in crisis, and it's basically suffered, let's say, three simultaneous challenges. The first one is, which is normal for industries like sugar and agricultural commodities, but basically, as you know, this is a global industry, and there are many times where there's global oversupply. And as you know what happens, and that's why almost all countries in the world protect the agricultural sectors, but basically because of international pressure, the price of the product falls below the production costs of farmers, which means that it's uneconomical. So everybody has protection for the sugar industry. So unfortunately, we did have a bumper harvest in India, and the world price has fallen, and our sugar industry is faced by that profit crisis. But simultaneously, we ourselves in the country, for whatever reason and for maybe good health reasons, we introduced a sugar levy, which, as you know, if you introduce a tax, the product costs more, which means demand for the product falls. So we've had a global oversupply, and then we have a local drop in demand because of the sugar, and also private sector, because they've got an extra cost, they start, and as you will see now, you've got all these sugar-free drinks, sugar-free Coke, sugar-free everything, because people want to use less sugar because the price has risen as a result of the sugar levy. And then the third one we faced is that one of the major sugar millers has done what is similar to a Steinhoff. They have suffered a major governance and stock market crisis because they've been speculating in land holdings and so on. So that is the industry, but the good news is we've been, the industry and the ministers have been working to come up with a solution to this, and both the minister and Minister de Deza, our minister and Minister de Deza convened a forum with all the industry stakeholders, and we are jointly working on a plan, and that is where the department and Harold is working with the industry, and they've been given tight deadlines. I think it's in 4 weeks. They must come up with a turnaround plan and a diversification strategy. They'll enlighten you on the details of that, but it's basically a plan for us to jointly, like we did with the auto industry and clothing and textile, we want to jointly develop a plan for the industry. So, Chair, that's the background. But as I said, it's a very long history. It's a complicated industry, and I'll hand over to Misa and then the rest of the team.
Thank you, Chair and members and DG and colleagues, and a very good morning, and the farmers, Sanbonan.
I can see there's still business there, but because we do have copies, we can actually allow you to proceed.
With hard copies. Okay. Thank you so much, DG. I think, DG, you've covered most of the issues in terms of the status of the sugar industry and also the fact that this work commenced from the previous portfolio committee, and we want to sort of continue with some of the issues that have not been addressed in terms of, you know, the sugar industry, some of the issues that were sort of highlighted on the legacy report. Just to start from slide 3 in terms of the contents or the outline of the presentation, I would look first at the objectives of the sugar regulations, because that's what we are currently doing now, as well as the framework of the sugar industry. And also, I will also talk about the old sugar industry structure, the structure that has been in existence, I think, almost plus 20 years. And then also I would look at the process that we are following in terms of amending the current regulations. And then DG has talked about the transitional arrangements, the support that we have provided as a collective in terms of government departments to the emerging farmers. And then I'll also talk about the diversification plan. DG has talked about the transformation plan. I'll also elaborate on that. And then the engagement with the ministers with the sugar industry. There was a sort of an engagement currently that was held by the minister of Minister Toko Didiza as well as Minister Patel with the sugar industry, the whole sugar value chain. And then thereafter I'll go to the way forward. Now I would like to move to slide. Are we back?
Hello? Yes, Kevin?
Sorry to interject, Chair. I'm not sure if we're aware, but the screens are not working all that well. And maybe I was sleeping and doing something else at the same time, but can we sort that out, please?
No, you had a nap.
For sure. I'm just making sure.
Because we have just noticed, and I said the technicians can continue trying to help us connect. Please, there are copies distributed. We can just use those hard copies before us. And I think in your presentation, you just be kind to us on which page you're in, and then we can proceed in that way. Okay, it was a nap, Cuthbert. You did take a nap, for sure. Okay, floor is yours.
Okay, thank you, Chair, once again. I am now on slide number 4, the regulatory framework of the sugar industry. Currently, we have two pieces of documents that regulate the industry. The first one is the Sugar Act, number 9 of 1978. We also have the Sugar Industry Agreement of 2000, as well as the SASA Constitution. Those are the three pieces of documents or regulations that are currently regulating the document. But I must indicate, the industry. I must indicate that what is important or key for the industry is the Sugar Industry Agreement as well as the SASA Constitution, which regulates the industry on a continuous basis. And then the Sugar Act is an overarching framework that actually regulates. You're talking about only a 14-page document when you look at the Sugar Act number 9 of 1978. But when you look at the agreement, you are talking about a document that has got more than 168 sections. So what regulates the industry? What runs the industry is the Sugar Industry Agreement as well as SASA Constitution. So as and when we think about or the industry, they want to make some changes in terms of, you know, matters of transformation, policy issues, those two documents are very important, Chairperson. And then I'm now on slide number 5, which talks to the sugar industry structure. This is the old structure of the industry, which mainly has got, which had two parties, which is mainly the sugarcane growers as well as the sugar millers, SA sugar millers. And so both the parties, they are members of the SASA Council. And in terms of the sugarcane growers, it used to be only one party that was involved, which is the so-called the commercial farmers, which were previously known as South African Cane Growers Association. There were no or few black participants in terms of the South African Cane Growers Association. That is an old sugar industry structure. And then now I would move to slide number 6. The state of the sugar industry currently, we've seen a shrunk in terms of the hectareage or plantation from 430 hectares to currently almost 360,000 hectares now, which is a loss of almost 2% per annum since 1983. So there has been a reduction in terms of the sugar cane, and the farmers have stopped most of them investing into the industry. And I must indicate some of the farmers who came to the portfolio committee, they indicated that they got negative statement because of the fact that this industry is no longer viable. So those were some of the challenges that we're indicating because of what DG talked about, the depressed prices. But more importantly, the cost of doing business, which is the cost of production, so which made most of the farmers to sort of go out of business. Hence, you see the sort of shrunk in terms of the hectareage of sugarcane. And then we've also seen that the milling and refinery have got overcapacity, and DG has talked about a number of job losses we have had over the media, Tonga Dulet. And I must also indicate, also RCL has indicated to us that they are also in that sort of process now to sort of reduce the number of jobs. So it's quite a sort of a situation or challenge that the industry is faced with. Hence, as DTI, we have been working very closely with the industry to say they need to look at alternatives, because we're talking about a sunset industry now because of the number of challenges that DG has talked about. But I will talk more about the diversification issues that we are proposing to the industry. I am now moving to slide number 7 to continue the state of the sugar industry. One of the issues that the industry has been faced with, especially in 2018-19, Chair and members, was around the imports from Eswatini. We've seen a surge of imports of almost 410,000 tons of sugar coming into South Africa, which is a SACU matter, which unfortunately at DTI at this point in time, because of the SACU agreement that we're having, there's very little that we can do that. But there were proposals from the sugar industry to say they want to talk to Eswatini, the Sugarcane Association from Eswatini. So the sort of discussions, they are in progress. Although I must also indicate that we have, the minister met with the sugar industry to say the Eswatini matter, it's unfortunately a difficult matter, because as the country, we are exporting almost 90% of the products to Eswatini. So as South Africa, we cannot complain about only one product, which is sugar. So it's a matter that is related to trade relations that we're having with Eswatini. Now I am moving to slide number 8, which is ITEC sugar tariff. Due to the fact that the industry has been faced with not only the imports from Eswatini, but also the deep sea imports, especially in 2018, we had to sort of come up with the protection of the industry. We got an application, and the application was submitted through ITEC in terms of tariff protection. And then the application was received April 2018, and then in August 2021, and then the industry was granted the increase in terms of the reference price, almost $680 from the current 566. So we granted there, although I think the industry felt like this was not adequate. But what we have indicated to the industry is to say they need to look at other alternatives, because we're talking about the industry that is already in decline. So we have granted, the minister actually approved that last year, that was in August, that was in October last year. Just to look at the objectives of the review of the sugar regulation, one of the issues that DG talked about, that we need to review the current sugar regulations, mainly to ensure transformation, growth, as well as the sustainability of the industry, but more importantly, the long-term competitiveness of the industry, and also to contribute to the optimal development of the industry and inclusive growth. So that's why we have started the work of amendment of the regulations, especially the current transitional arrangements. In terms of the ministerial, I'm now on slide number 10, Chair and Members. In terms of the ministerial prerogative to change the regulations, the minister has got all the powers to change and amend the sugar regulations, but in consultation with the industry. So that work already has commenced, because the arrangement that is in place is ending on the 31st March 2020, so the industry has to move fast in terms of coming up with the long-term sugar regulations. So the minister has got prerogative there in terms of the amendment, as well as the date or the extension in terms of the current transitional arrangements. So all the powers are vested to the minister in terms of the regulations, the sugar industry regulations. Then now I am now on slide number 11. After we had a couple of engagements with the previous PPC, we went on a temporal, I would say provisional, transitional arrangement to sort of look at running the affairs of the industry, mostly to recognize the black players in the industry, which was the major issue from a transformation point of view. And then we started first with the structure of the industry, because the structure was not in recognition of the black players. And then we came up with a new structure, which is, has got the South African Cane Growers Association, as well as the small players, which is the South African Farmers Development Association, and then as well as SASMA with the South African Sugar Millers Association. That is the current structure. And then the details around the structure, it's on page 12 in terms of the organogram of the structure, which is currently the structure that is actually running the industry. You will see on top is the South African Sugar Association, which has got the South African Sugar Research Institution, which is an institution that runs all the R&D related to the sugar cane as well as the sugar. And then you would see, again, I'm now on line number 2 of the structure. We have South African Millers Association, South African Growers Association, and South African Farmers Development Association. So all the small growers are now represented in the industry. And then you'll see at the bottom of the organogram, we have the milling companies, which are assisting in terms of the refinery of the sugar there. Now I am on slide number 13. Can I quickly move to slide number 14, because it's the same as slide number 13. Slide number 14, which is the SASA levy structure. One of the issues that was raised by the South African Farmers Development Association was that they were unfortunately not able to benefit in terms of the levies that were paid to the South African Sugar Association, because the whole association, it's mainly run through the levies, especially the operational costs. So small scale farmers, they felt like they were not benefiting in terms of the levies that they were paying to the South African Sugar Association. And then we had to work on an arrangement to say, how do we make sure that our small scale farmers are able to benefit on the levies? And then one of the issues that was taken into consideration in terms of the transitional provision was to say, can we make sure that both the small-scale farmers as well as the large-scale farmers are able to benefit from the levies? So we went for a 50-50 arrangement, and the industry agreed on that. It was a mammoth task, I must indicate, that we had a couple of meetings to make sure that the small-scale growers, they benefit from their own levies, because at the end of the day, these are their own levies. That is, the sugar cane that they deliver to the millers, they are levied on it, and then they are supposed to get it back to sort of run their own operation. So DG was very much on top of the game to make sure that the South African Farmers Development Association, they benefit from the levies. So they agreed that a 50-50 arrangement, which is the cane growers as well as the South African Farmers Development Association, whilst at the same time the millers, they are also getting 36% levies. But I must also indicate that from 2018-19, also the budget SASA released for both organizations, which is the South African Farmers Development Association as well as the South African Cane Growers Association. So now we're expecting budgets again to be submitted to the South African Sugar Association for the 2019-2020. So the matter in terms of the levies, at least now we have put it into rest, members and the industry. So the industry is moving, I think, through a very sort of peaceful arrangement in that regard. Because what we have done in terms of the transitional arrangement, we did not only look at the growers' levies. We've looked at the whole industry levies. That is what we call industry costs. So that in terms of the subsidization of the small-scale farmers, all the parties who are sort of participating in the industry, they are able to subsidize the small-scale farmers. Because initially it was only the growers' levies or growers' costs that were sort of subsidizing the small-scale farmers. So the millers agreed to say, let's look at the industry levies in that regard, industry costs in that regard, that is going to cover everybody who's participating in the industry in terms of their operational budget. I am now on slide number 15, Chair. One of the issues that was raised in terms of the legacy report was to say we need to sort of make sure that the small-scale farmers, they are supported. Here you are talking about plus 22,000 small-scale farmers in the industry. The PPC, the previous PPC visited the most of the farms around KZN, and they picked up quite a number of challenges in terms of support that government is supposed to provide to the small-scale farmers. And then we were requested to sort of collaborate with other departments because some of the issues were outside our mandate that were raised by the previous PPC, like issues around irrigation infrastructure, issues around production inputs, issues around water, and issues around ESCOM. Then we started engagement with the South African Farmers Development Association, with the Department of Rural Development, to say, can you please support the small-scale farmers, especially on the issues around the production inputs, around the ratoon management program. And I must say that the Dr. DLR has come into party there, where they provided a grant of almost 133 million, and then a 10-year MOU, which has been signed by SAFTA. The event was attended by the previous PPC members, and we hope that we will continue also looking at other elements like the diversification, because the 133 million is only focusing on the primary production support. So we want to look at other elements like your agrologistics, as well as acquiring some of the milling facilities, if there are any milling facilities that are available, or to establish new milling facilities. So that work with Dr. DLR is ongoing to look at the primary as well as secondary agriculture within the sugar value chain. And I am now, slide 16. Thank you, colleagues, for helping us with technology. Thank you so much. In terms of the current transitional arrangements, these are the arrangements that are regulating the industry, like at this point in time, which are ending 31st March 2020. If they are not changed or they are not amended, the industry is going to go back into square one. So we have emphasized to the industry that they need to sort of amend the regulations so that the minister can sort of gazette the regulations, because if they are not amended before 31st March, the industry will go back to the previous arrangement, which is, you know, where the black players were not recognized. But the current arrangements are mainly around grower representation in the South African Sugar Association, where we're looking at shared, they share equally representation at SASA level, 50-50 representation at SASA level, especially at a council level. And then also, secondly, the current arrangement talks about the association costs, which should be covered again by SASA, mainly for the South African Cane Growers Association as well as South African Farmers Development Association. Again, there we have agreed on a 50-50 arrangement on condition that both budgets that have been submitted to SASA, they are reasonable, and SASA has actually gone through and look at whether the operational costs are justifiable. So that work is being done by the South African Sugar Association to make sure that whatever budgets that they receive from the cane growers as well as the Farmers Development Association and millers, they are reasonable. They are talking to their operational costs. So for 2018-19, the operational costs have been covered for all the association, the millers as well as the cane growers. Now we're looking for 2019-2020 season, which I think, by the way, 2019-2020 also has been covered. Instead, now we're looking at 2020-2021 operational budget, which should be submitted to SASA. So that matter has been sorted out by the South African Sugar Association, unless maybe there are new developments. But my understanding with the ongoing engagements that I've been having with the South African Sugar Association. There are no issues in terms of the operational cost of all the associations. The current, in terms of the Millers Association cost, I've also talked about that. Also, they need to submit their budgets to the South African Sugar Association, and they've been covered for 2018-19 as well as 2019-2020. Now we're looking forward in terms of the 2020-2021 operational budget. I am now on proposed diversification options. Due to the fact that we're talking about an industry that has got quite a number of challenges, which DJ has talked about, and one of those issues is the impact of the sugar tax, and then the depressed sugar prices, and then the cost of production. So we're seeing the industry that that is in decline. So we have advised the industry to look at the diversification, and we've been working very closely with the advisor to the minister, Mr. Harold Harvey, to say how can we make sure that the industry, you know, looks at the diversification. And in terms of the diversification, we are not only looking at the downstream side of the diversification, we are also looking at the primary side, which is the upstream side of the diversification, to say can the farmers look at other crops, like for example macadamia, to look at the sugar beans, etc., because the industry is in decline. Although we know for a fact that now millers, they have overcapacity in terms of the available sugar, so those are some of the challenges that the industry has to face. But at the same time, we're saying if there's enough sugar cane, can we use it, for example, to look at other revenue stream? Because in terms of the regulations now, the industry is only operating in, is only having two product lines, which is mainly your molasses as well as sugar. So we're saying to the industry, can you look at other revenue streams so that we are able to sort of sustain the industry? And one of the issues that we are proposing through the diversification plan, which we have actually requested CSIR to undertake, and the work is in progress, they are looking at three revenue streams, which is mainly your ethanol. Fortunately, we've been having engagements with Petro SA in terms of the ethanol, and they've indicated that currently they're importing quite a lot of octane, and you know, through the blending process, maybe that can be an option. But there's a lot of work that we need to do in terms of the cost of establishing those ethanol plants. So that's what CSIR is doing, but at the same time, the marketing of the ethanol, as well as the regulatory framework through the Department of Energy in terms of the ethanol. And then also the issue around electricity cogeneration. I must indicate that some of the milling companies already are involved in this space that I've visited. They are doing already, they are generating their own electricity in their plants, so they've moved out of the grid. They are no longer, you know, using the electricity from the main grid. So it's something, it's an option that the industry can look at. That's why we've brought in place, Harold, to say, can we collaborate with Eskom? Can we collaborate with the municipalities so that they're able to sort of buy the electricity from the milling companies? But again, costing is an issue. The costing in terms of the pricing, the pricing of electricity is still an issue. So we need to do a lot of collaboration with the Department of Energy. Another alternative that we've seen as a quick win is around the bioplastic, because Coca-Cola as well as Pepsi-Cola, the beverages companies, they are willing to sort of, you know, buy the bioplastics from the sugar industry if they go through that sort of process. But it's a work that we need to collaborate with the CCBCA as well as Pepsi-Cola, and also to look at the regulations around the environment, etc. So working with the advice of the minister, we are trying to push to make sure that we get a buy-in from the downstream users, which is the Coca-Cola beverage SA. Fortunate enough, there's a task team already that we have started there. But at the same time, we need to look at the feasibility of establishing, you know, those bioplastic plants as well as bioethanol plants, because cost becomes very important. Because the figures that we've seen from CSIR, we are talking about more than 20 billion that we need to set aside to assist the farmers, to assist the industry to set up those plans. So it's a costing issue that we need to manage at this point in time, and work is in progress. But at the same time, the Millers, at this point in time, they've signed the NDA, so that the non-disclosure agreement, so that we're able to see in terms of the costing that they have, for example, in terms of the co-gen, those that are doing co-gen. So the CSIR is working very closely with the milling companies, because milling companies have to drive the diversification. But we're beginning to see diversification as also another transformation, you know, pillar that we can use, especially for the participation of small-scale growers. For example, if you look at the areas like Ejozin, there's no milling facility there. So those are some of the areas that we are saying, if we can establish a small bioplastic plant in that area, or a small bioethanol plant, I think those farmers who are transporting the sugar cane for almost 200 hectares, they'll be able to benefit from that intervention. So the study is looking at all those options. But at the same time, the milling companies that are in distress at this point in time, they are saying to us, we have opportunities in terms of black economic participation in the industry, especially in the milling facility. So we're looking at talking to some of the milling companies to give an opportunity to the small players in the industry to participate along the value chain. So work is in progress there. We're hoping by end of March next year we would have concluded the diversification plan, and then the implementation will commence the beginning of 2020 for the diversification. And also, I think it's one issue that we are reporting about to the NEDLAC, especially on the health promotion issues. DG has talked about this. I don't want to dwell much around the transformation plan, but I must indicate that we have received a draft sugar transformation plan. It was also presented to the previous PPC. It was submitted by the South African Sugar Association, but there's still a lot of work to be done there, because we are not only looking at, you know, small things in terms of the transformation. We are looking at all the pillars of the transformation, issues around ownership, issues around control, etc., so that farmers are able to benefit from that. But already the industry has made a commitment of $1 billion for the next 3 years to look at some of the interventions to help the cane growers, especially around the production, etc. So that sort of commitment that was made by the South African Sugar Association, we are following up to make sure that our farmers are able to sort of benefit, especially on the production side and other activities of the value chain. So the transformation plan is still at a draft stage. So work is in progress there in terms of, you know, finalizing the transformation plan. We might have to come back to the PPC to give more, you know, information together with the South African Sugar Association in terms of the transformation plan, because there were comments that were made by the PPC, so we needed to go back and refine the transformation plan so that it's able to cover all the pillars of the transformation. Now I am on the engagement of Minister Ditisa as well as Minister Patel with the sugar industry. Due to the number of challenges that the industry is faced with, our ministers, they've engaged with the sugar industry, the whole sugar value chain, which is the downstream users as well as the upstream users. And these are the outcomes of the meeting with the minister, that it was agreed that the protection strategy for the industry needs to be phased out in favor of one based on competitiveness. The fact that the industry keeps on, you know, asking for tariff protection, the industry needs to look at other policy levers like diversification, transformation, as well as investment into, you know, the diversification plan. And also the industry has to focus on export orientation as a pillar to support competitiveness and include the opportunities in terms of the African Continental Free Trade Agreement access to market there, because the AFCTA it's there to give the opportunities, especially for export promotion. And then the imposition of a surcharge on Eswati imports will not be adopted to preserve regional ties and right in the South African Development Community and SACO agreement. This is one issue that it's covered in terms of the Sugar Act, to say, for example, if there are continuous imports, surge of imports from other countries, can the industry levy those countries that are you know, bringing, you know, the imports. But what we have advised the industry, that would be against the WTO, for them to further levy, you know, the countries like Eswatini. They cannot do that in terms of the WTO arrangement because that is against the rules of the WTO. But we need to look at ways to manage what is happening in Eswatini, maybe through the collaboration. So we've received the legal opinion from our WTO desk to say that is unfortunately not possible, because that was a proposal that was made by the SASA Association to say there is a clause in terms of the Sugar Act that we can use to levy or to put additional charges to the imports from other countries. And then the proposal for the HPL proceeds cannot be used for agriculture development, as these were reinforced for promotion by the Department of Health. And the fact that the sugar tax has got a bearing in terms of, you know, the revenue for the industry, we are talking about the 2 billion rands that the industry has lost because of the impact of the health promotion levy. So the industry was saying, can we sort of get that sort of 2 billion that has been, you know, lost in the industry, especially to look at the agricultural development. So I must say that work is ongoing with the National Treasurer to see how can that money be sort of reinvested back to the industry, especially the proceeds from the HPL. The minister will then now reconvene another meeting with the industry in a month's time just to get the proposals in terms of how are they going to look at the turnaround strategy for the industry, because the DTI has been providing protection to the industry, but now we want, the minister wants a commitment from the whole value chain to say what kind of interventions are they going to put in place to make sure that the industry is back on its track, especially looking at the opportunities around the export orientation as well as the issues around the competitiveness. So that proposal, we are working with the industry to make sure that we present to both the Minister Toko Didisa as well as Minister Patel. Way forward, Chair and members, we are in a process of finalizing the sugar industry agreement. It needs to be sugar industry agreement as well as the SASA constitution. Because they are operating now at transitional arrangements and they are ending by 31st March 2020. We are putting a lot of pressure to the industry to sort of give us the inputs as approved by the SASA Council. So, but they've written to us as DTI to the DG to say that they will submit the amended sort of regulations by 31st, before the end of September, so that we can start the gazetting process. So that work already has commenced. We are working with the South African Sugar Association, and I must also indicate that I've seen also, you know, a lot of collaboration between the SAFTA as well as cane growers in terms of the new regulations now, the amended regulations that are being discussed. A lot of inputs from both parties. I don't think we'll have challenges to sort of get the new arrangements from the industry by end of this month. And then also the minister has established an interdepartmental task team to look at not only support from the department and also other departments like the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, as well as IDC. So the task team is in place, and the facilitator also, Herald, is part of the task team to look at the diversification of the industry. As I've indicated earlier on, that the industry has got no other option now just to look at the diversification, because we don't want to see it dying over the next 5 or 6 years. So we are on top of the game in that regard. In conclusion, I would like to conclude by saying the words from a wise man: action without a vision is only passing time. Vision without action is merely daydreaming, but vision with action can change the world. I think we aspire through the same, I think, vision which was indicated by our former President Nelson Mandela. I thank you.
With that conclusion, I think what we can do, just go back, just to actually get the comments from members, if ever maybe there are clarity issues, that we can actually be able to look at that. That would be quite helpful. So can I just take notes from members? I'm just going back to the beginning. I've noted Mulder, Tring, Hermans, in that order, and then Mantashe Mbuyane. in that order.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, everyone. I want to make some general comments. And the first thing is that there's clearly a huge challenge lying ahead of the industry and all of us. But I don't think that one can actually comment on this and looking at this challenge in isolation. It should be looked at from a global point of view. And what I mean by that is, you know, the sugar tax, for instance. According to the information, approximately 2.4 billion rand was raised by December 2018 with this new tax. And I'm not sure exactly to how many job losses it led. Other information that I just want to put forward is apparently the South African sugar industry ranks about 15 out of 120 sugar-producing countries in the world. And I'm also recognizing the fact that the global situation impacts the impact that it's got on the local industry. But what I wanted to say is that the biggest enemy on this stage, at this stage, of the South African sugar industry is most probably the Minister of Health with that tax that was imposed. And a question that the committee can ask is the tax that has been collected, 2.4 billion. National Treasury said that they would, or the Department of Health said that they would, they've got plans to use it on public health campaigns. We should actually check whether they're doing it, because that's the main reason that was given, that it was a health issue. Now, I don't believe, I seriously don't believe that that was the main reason. I think the government needed more tax. That's one thing. You know, just a general observe, if you see someone walking around with a Coca-Cola in his hand at 8 o'clock in the morning, that's most probably the reason for obesity. So I don't think that the government's got healthy policies, financial policies. That's a main problem. Why are we sitting in this mess in South Africa as it is? So I think that we the Minister of Health should reconsider, and that other uses for sugar should be investigated as well. But I applaud the department for looking at all the alternatives and sharing the information with us. But I think that if we really want to solve the problem, the government should relook their policies. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think my first one is just a correction. I think it is on slide six. The area under cane has shrunk by 60,000 hectares from 43,000 hectares to the current 360,000. So the shrinkage should actually be 70,000 if you want the maths to be correct. So it's about 10,000 hectares out. That's the first one. The second, Chair, is just the Director General made a comment in his introduction, and the comment with regards to the crisis in the sugar industry. And one of the things that caught my attention, Chair, was some of the role players engaging in Steinhoff-like activities. That's serious, because if we look at what Steinhoff has actually done, and the cost to the investors at Steinhoff, if we have players in the sugar industry that have been dabbling in Steinhoff-like activities, that is a serious comment that you've made. I would like for you to elaborate on that. The second comment, Chair, would be just with regards to diversification, and I'm not a farmer, but I don't know whether, and this may actually contribute more to the challenges that the sugarcane growers actually have, but stevia, the sugar plant. Um,
has there been thought to introducing, can that be used as another form of diversification? Question. And then my final stevia, yeah, this is sugar, it's a sugar plant. S-T-E-V-I-A, stevia. Apparently it has 300 times more sugar glucose quantity than the normal cane. So just a question. The leaf, that is, the leaf that it contains. And then finally, Chair, I think that with regards to the transformation, I think my view is that very often many of our, with regards to transformation that takes place, many of our farmers, black farmers, seem to be set up for failure where there are no proper mechanisms, assistance being given to them. And so when we look at the transformation, we certainly need to ensure that our black farmers are not set up for failure. I think that's just my final comment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for this presentation. I think if the government, if the decisions and the policies and the acts, the legislation of government protects the health of its citizens, then I think it must be commended. But I think the fallout from that should be managed. And one would want to think that we all knew that the major fallout from that was going to be unemployment. I was not in government that time, but I know that was the discussion. So surely another partner to finding a solution for the challenges we face is to bring on board the Department of Labor and Employment, because we must find a solution for the fact that it's causing job losses, because that affects the whole South African economy. And then just as an aside, I don't know if it's possible, if the tax, the sugar tax is being used for health programs, why can't we ask for a percentage of that to be diverted for the diversification process of the sugarcane industry, so that we make sure, because from what I hear, it's going to cost quite a lot of money for those growers to diversify. So why can't we have a percentage of the sugar tax for that purpose? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, first we must commend the work that the department has done so far in transforming the sector. And we will just be looking forward to the submissions that they will make at the end of September to the department. And we hope that we will not regress. Chair, one thing that I notice is that first, on our oversight last year, we were also informed that there are milling stations that are inactive, especially around Mzimkulu and other areas. And we just want to know whether those cannot be revived for the benefit of those black farmers, those black emerging farmers, because as I look at the structure now of the millers, it's only a white boys club, if I may say. So I think it's the view of the committee that would be happy that in every site of the industry there's proper representation, so that we realize the equity law of the country, Chairperson. But so far we applaud the ground that has been covered. We just hope we will not regress at the end of the term of this current agreement, but our eyes will be on the ball, Chair. Thank you so much.
Chairperson, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let's first welcome the report, and it's very much positive in terms of the transformation. So I just have two clarity-seeking questions. One maybe is in terms of the entire value chain of the sugar industry. Is the transformation talking to the entire value chain of the industry, or is talking to the farmers that they are just growing the mill or the entire value chain? Because we talk of milling, sugar cane growers, and the safter. And in terms of the agronogram that I see here, I'm not so sure in terms of the membership. Do we still talk of membership, or we talk of tonnage? Because we will be integrating the two, and the two in terms of membership are the black farmers, and the one they've got long tons of hectares and so forth. Then when they are going to vote, we'll have challenges in terms of that, given the fact that the South African Sugar Act is not clear on this one. Chairperson, thanks, man. I'm not sure in terms of the 50-50 plan, because there's a split here of the 50-50. And we want clarity as to, in terms of the 50-50, about 50-50 having black farmers, growers, and also in terms of the milling, because we don't just want to transform a sector of farmers, while in terms of even the refinery, we can be able to have black players in the industry. Chair, I think on the other one of the last page is 21, to finalize the amendment of the sugar industry. When are we going to change the constitution? Because it's long overdue. And transforming while the constitution of the very institution is against that, it will be a challenge. The transformation must begin with the constitution of SASA, then you transform in accordance with the constitution. I think that one will also assist us a great deal. And also the collaboration of SASA vis-a-vis the other one. We must fast track that one, because there's no way that we need to speed up, because if you want us to speed in terms of the ethanol and the bioethanol, that will be able to assist us. And we need a clear program as a portfolio committee to say when this is happening, and do we have a transformation plan that speaks to dates, when this is happening, this will happen then, so that we know exactly when are we going to deal with all these matters. It is proper, Chairperson, to conclude like saying it's very much important for us, because as a department, our only mandate is to deal with trade and so forth. There are departments that must be involved in this thing, because we are talking of agriculture, we're talking of labor, exploitation, so all those departments must integrate and deal with one issue, that is transformation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. I want to take a different view on the presentation presented. It's actually depressing and filled with inaccuracies. And I also want to take this committee back to the 26th of February, where we met as a committee, and I proposed that we urgently needed to have discussions on the impending crisis in the sugarcane industry. This committee voted against that. They said they didn't want to do it because, and I quote, they had no time. And we now know that it's actually the sugar farmers and sugar industry that has never had time. And what they did, Chair, and this is for your own historical background, is they abrogated their responsibility to the former Minister of Trade and Industry to engage with the Minister of Health and Finance to discuss the health promotion levy, ensure compliance with implementing of mitigating measures agreed to at NEDLAC with with respect to the health promotion levy, and ensuring that the sugar industry utilizes its full quota within the European Union. And since February, none of that has been done. In fact, we've sat by and we've continued to watch things unfold. And so I find that the presentation that's presented is a continuation of a discussion that has been held in this committee for the last 2 years, and we keep going around in circles, and we keep not getting to what really needs to be done. And transformation is important, make no mistake. But transformation without an industry leaves everyone with nothing. And that is the situation that we are heading towards. So it is completely not true to state on page 20 that the health promotion levy proceeds cannot be used for agricultural development. That is true, because it is ring-fenced for the health promotion by the Department of Health. That is not true. The health promotion levy goes into the general revenue fund. It is not used for health promotion. Not a single cent of it is used for health promotion. And that's why the Honourable Hermans is mistaken when she says that, in fact, it is a noble cause because it is used to promote health amongst our citizens. It is nothing other than a general revenue tax on the industry, which has cost jobs and forced businesses and farmers to make cuts, and has then sought to make end users go and find alternatives, which has further deepened the crisis in the industry. So there's only one response to the health promotion levy from this committee, and that should be calling for a moratorium on the health promotion levy until such time as the sector has stabilized. Chair, and that is something that we should be calling for, because there is simply no data, none whatsoever, that proves that the health promotion levy has or will have any effect on the health of South African citizens. And the most disingenuous thing that the Department of Finance went and did in the last budget was that they raised the health promotion levy by 10% to make it even more aggressive on the industry, to cost more jobs and to generate more revenue, not to protect or promote anyone's health. Since this committee chair passed the budget report, we asked that the minister engage ITAC to review the tariffs. And so it is wrong for the department to say, well, you know, we must just wait for 3 years for the review to be done. The department knows that we've made this call. The department should be giving us an update on when that engagement is going to be taking place. And so I'm astounded, quite frankly, that you would say that the industry must look at diversification. They've been asking for that for 10 years now. For 10 years, they've been asking to do so. And you know why they can't? Because there's no legislation that allows them to do so. There's no regulation that gives them certainty that the investment that they make in diversification will yield returns. And I think that the worst comment with respect, Chair, that was made is that farmers must look at other crops. That's the solution to the problem in the sugar industry. Go and plant something else. Don't plant sugar. That is actually, with respect, you know, bordering on arrogance. I mean, who are we to tell farmers what they should or shouldn't be planting to be profitable? You know, it's like saying to a dairy farmer, well, you know, dairy's not so good this year, go and farm sheep or chickens. I mean, who would ever say that? Do you know why they can't produce electricity? Because Eskom won't allow them to feed electricity into the grid. No agreement with Eskom, no legislation to do so. But this all boils down to the one point, the fifth bullet, that should have been in your way forward. Where is the review bill? When are we going to get a new bill? 1976, no amendment. 1978, sorry, Honourable Herman, thank you. 1978 and no review bill on the table. And this committee, and I will give the committee that, has been asking for 2 years for that. And nothing. And Chair, it is disrespectful to this committee when the department knows that it is an intention of this committee to see a review, to not put that as a way forward. Because that, in fact, is the way forward. To give certainty, to allow farmers to diversify, to deal with issues like cogeneration. That is what is needed. And yet the department continues to be silent on it. And Chair, if the department is not going to do it, well then maybe we should. Because we cannot continue to ask farmers to grow other crops, to you know, to wait another 10 years for electricity, to mislead this committee that the health promotions levy is being ring-fenced for health reasons when it's not. And, you know, absconding our responsibility to the executive. So I would like to know, DG, when is the bill coming? Why can we not call for a moratorium on the health promotion levy? Why has it taken 10 years on the industry on diversification for the industry to be finalized? And what is the update with regards to the minister's interaction with ITAC on having the levies reviewed? Thank you.
Cuthbert, you raised it, you didn't. Okay. I'll take Mantashe. I just wanted to make sure that at least we go back across to the DG.
Okay, I just wanna be I want to be directed to a page on this presentation that says maybe I didn't see it. I've been asking Buya. Okay, I didn't see it. I was shocked. I didn't read the document. But I must repeat myself, Chair. We from the African National Congress, we are happy with the progress so far because we know where we're coming from. And we've been there personally for oversight. And we're happy that other departments have come to the party because not all was what was on the ground as problems was the responsibility of the Department of Trade and Industry. Mm-hmm. We're happy that the Department of Agriculture has come into the party. But we so wish that they can assist in ensuring that they revive the milling areas so that we can expand and ensure that our black emerging farmers can be part of the millers themselves so that their crops can get to the milling as soon as possible so that they don't lose their value. Thank you, Chair.
Maybe before one actually asks the department to respond or comment, so I think what might actually be quite important to keep as form of communication. I think English is first language to the honorable member. And in some of the issues, it's not what you say, it's how you say it, which is actually very important. So I think one would just request that we actually keep the decorum of our communication at the point that doesn't actually undermine the other part. Because if ever the department, DG, is actually making this presentation and committee members think you're misleading us, it's a bit of a challenge. So because I'm actually just referring to that, because it's quite important that we actually keep the decorum and the level of discussion, because in our platform we're sitting on here as a portfolio committee, we do actually have important stakeholders who will actually come here and try and actually see what's happening. I know that the South African Farmers Development Association, SAFDA, is here as well. And I think maybe in terms of, you know, on the lighter note of some of the issues coming through, when you said SASA, I said, oh, is it South African Farmers Development Security SASA? But I said, oh, later on I said, no, it's double S on the other one. It's not actually one S. But I think we do as well pick up on issues of the sugar tax. It is actually health promotion levy as it comes through. And on the other side, there's been issues which are done in terms of, you know, impacting on issues, because when we tax alcohol-related space, cigarettes, I think there is actually a big issue of saying, with that tax, are we really winning the battle to reduce, you know? And I think it does actually apply to some extent. Same issue to be applicable in terms of the sugar tax. You actually have to say, are we really winning? Are we actually getting the things that are big challenges? Because there is actually a big challenge associated with the tax for the nation. And when you actually look at what we're doing to respond to that, it may be actually quite important to look at the level of detail of saying, are we succeeding or are we really, you know, getting the balance right with the kind of exposure to health and wellness of South Africans when it comes to use of sugar. But I'm just saying that that's actually one point. So I will actually then refer back to you at DG just to respond and take comments. But I think on the point which I wanted just to raise, that it will be important, particularly for colleagues who are actually, which English is the first language, to use actually better English for the communication we have in this space. It's very important.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And as I said, also maybe in line with tradition, I will handle as the DG the easy questions, and then the difficult ones that Honorable McPherson and others have asked, I'll ask the team to respond. I think if I could kick off, I think Honorable Mulder, Honorable Hermans, and I think Honorable McPherson have strongly raised this issue of the sugar tax and the sugar levy. And as I indicated in our proposal, of course, as the department, it's above our pay grade to, this is a matter of tax tax policy and tax regulation. But as I said, from a technical perspective, we have confirmed that it is one of the causes of the current crisis. So, and that could be shown because the drop in demand for sugar happened immediately after the levy was introduced. So there's no doubt about it that it has had a negative impact. Now, as you know, every country and you as parliamentarians, you know, every complex society has trade-offs to make between the demands of health. And as we know, sugar is the cause of a range of lifestyle diseases. But from an economic perspective, there can be no doubt that this one is negative for the industry, negative for employment, and we would support any move, but it's, as I said, it's your decision. But we would definitely say that there must be a review of the impact of this levy. Secondly, in every society, when they deal with the agricultural sector, the losers are always compensated. And as you know, even when Donald Trump now makes war with China,
he immediately always gives out billions of subsidy to the farmers who are negatively affected by trade union. In the EU, they've got an agricultural policy which specifically compensates the farming industry at every turn. So I think likewise, we agree that there should be a, as I said, there needs to be compensation and a relook at this sugar tax. But as I indicated, even if we do solve the sugar issue, the industry still has a problem. So it doesn't mean if we wave that quick wand, everything is going to be okay. It is still going to be significantly challenged because even consumers, and it's globally, people are using less sugar. It's a consumer preference issue. And the global trend is going much faster even, but I think you can no deny that whether you have a sugar tax or not, people will be using less sugar for health reasons. So the question then of diversification is a matter of life and death for this industry. They can no longer rely on the normal revenue streams that have been in this industry for 500 years. So I think the point that we make, that we all call on people to diversify, every country in the world is diversifying. As you know, in Brazil, in 1973 already, they switched to biofuels. And that is why the industry has survived, is because they've created and they've invested billions in creating a biofuel industry. So ethanol and so on is a growing trend globally. So I think it's we are late to the party of diversification. I think where Honorable McPherson is absolutely right, I think the sugar tax, like in every other tax, goes into the general revenue fund. I think the point that was being made is that the purpose that Treasury proposed the tax was for health purposes, and not necessarily that it would go to the health department, but it would be to satisfy their policy position, because the Department of Health has argued very strongly that we need to cut down on sugar consumption and so on. Honorable Tring, I think on the issue of you've raised very important points, and we will look on the issue of diversification, which you've made about stevia. And then also I think we take your point, especially about the support for the black farmers. Now, I think as you can see with this industry, and this is the only one left in the country where you can see there's such a well-regulated industry with such a strong association. Now, that is normal practice across the world. You will find marketing boards, cooperatives, massive support for farmers. Unfortunately, in our country, we made the cardinal sin of deregulating this industry, except for sugar. So this is a normal practice across the world, and we really have to start reversing that question about the deregulation that we did, because all we did was white farmers enjoyed a highly regulated and protected industry for hundreds of years. And then in 1994, we withdrew that, and now black farmers don't have that support, which every farmer across the world has. So we need to introduce what we have in the sugar industry, this kind of industry body, industry support. We need to extend it to. But fortunately, we still have preserved it in the sugar industry. And the only reason for that is because the sugar industry falls under the DTI and not Department of Agriculture. All the other industries and marketing boards was dissolved in the agricultural department, and we preserve this one. And that's why, as I said, Honorable McPherson, we are so holy about this act that we still have about the Sugar Act. That act is a very short, but it's just an enabling act, but it allows us to keep this industry well regulated. The real changes we have to make is to the regulations. The real is the question of the sugar agreement and the SASSA constitution, because the act says very little, but it gives all the powers to the South African Sugar Association. And it also gives billions of rands of levies, which is paid to the Sugar Association. The land at Durban Harbour, the facilities, the terminal facility is owned by SASSA. So SASSA is a major body, as it is across the world. So when we want to reform the industry, what Fumisa was proposing, we must change the regulations and we must change the SASSA constitution. It's no use changing the act. That act only says you must give the power. So that is why we're dealing with these matters specifically. Then on the issue of, Stidoff, which is a very important one, I think, as I said, in all other countries, if what happened there, there would have been a parliamentary inquiry. Because, as you know, with the sugar millers own probably half of KZN in terms of land holdings. So what happened is instead of working on this diversification and instead of looking at building the sugar industry, the sugar millers have been speculating and selling off the land. But of course, what has also been shown on the stock exchange, and that is why the share price fell, the CEO had to resign, there was a crisis, is because the way they were valuing these assets, it was reported that they valued assets even before the land was paid for. And that inflated their books, and people thought they were making these profits and they held these assets, whereas in reality, the land hadn't been bought yet or completely paid for. So it was an accounting phenomenon, and that's why I referred it to as a similar kind of Steinhoff. And I'm saying that must be looked at further. And I think I welcome your point that it must be interrogated further, because what the company should have been doing is, if it was a sugar company, it would have been, because as I said, they were well capitalized, they'd been supported, well resourced in the good times. When the sugar price was high, they should have invested in the alternative products and in alternative products. But I think it's now overdue and so on. Then, Honorable Ting, so I think that covers that one. I think, Honorable Hermans, I think that the Hermans, that the point is true that we need to look at some kind of a compensation for the losers around the sugar levy, because, as I said, with a country with one-third or 25% unemployment, the trade-off must be towards job preservation rather than, well, I mean, that's for you to decide, but for the parliament to decide, but if you look at between health and jobs, I think the trade-off needs to go the other way. I think Honorable Bantashi, thanks for that. But thanks to you, Honorable Bantashi and McPherson, for the guidance you've given us over this critical issue. So the only issue now, and I think my concluding point is Honorable Mbuyane has asked about the criteria now for representation, because as you know, whether they're going to use membership or whether they're going to use tonnage for the representation of black farmers. We are saying that we had to develop a unique South African solution to this problem because our history is unique. Because black farmers cannot, or they didn't have the land or the experience or the opportunity to produce the amount of tonnage that white farmers produce. So you cannot say you must vote on the amount of tonnage. Similarly, we obviously, the membership can't also work as in other countries, it's one farmer, one vote. But given our history, it's also not appropriate. So our recommendation to the industry, to SAFTA, to SASSA, to cane growers is, maybe we should consider the national unity government arrangement which we developed at CODESA, that you go 50-50, irrespective of your membership, your output. So our recommendation, and we've got SAFTA in the room, is that we make permanent the transitional arrangement with regards to so that that's how we deal with it, Honorable Mabuyane, on that. I'll then, as I said, if there's any other issues that the team has dealt with, I'll hand over to them.
Thank you, Dij. I think Dij, you've covered most of the issues. It's just to put an emphasis around the transformation, to say that we had it work with the South African Sugar Association to make sure that the black players are able to participate in the value chain. And milling companies already have indicated to us that they are willing to sort of partner with the small-scale farmers. I'm talking about Tonga Tulet they've requested a meeting with the minister. I'm talking about Ilovo to look at, you know, collaboration, partnerships with the small players, because we have seen that if we don't look at, you know, the downstream, you know, value chain opportunities, the refinery space, then it, from a transformation point of view, then the industry won't be properly transformed. Fortunate enough, we are talking about the industry that is in decline now. The opportunities, they are open for the black players to participate in the industry. The last issue that I want to talk about, DG, you have covered, thank you so much, you have covered all the areas. It's around the ITEC, the issue around the review of the sugar tariff. We have engaged ITEC, and ITEC have indicated to us, unfortunately, in terms of their policy space, they are only allowed to review it after 3 years. But we will continue to sort of engage. If, but there are cases of, for example, dumping cases, so the industry, they must feel free to submit application for anti-dumping. But at the same time, ITEC has indicated to us, we can look at other, you know, protection measures. They can advise in that regard. So hence, I've talked about the issue of surcharge that the industry has put forward to ITEC and other, you know, tariff protection. So ITEC is willing to engage as and when, you know, there's a need for protection.
I wasn't sure because I see the member raising her hand while you're speaking. Can you just take your notes and then be able to actually follow up? Floor is yours, so that because at least you're going to disturb the response to your questions. It doesn't make sense. Thank you.
Yes. And then the issue around the regulation, I want to put my head on the block on this one, that we are engaging with the industry, that at least by end of September, we must have finalized the current arrangements, because they are going to put the industry in the original position. Do you understand? Where black players, they are not participating in the industry. So they've written to us to say by end of September, they will submit the final, transitional arrangements to the DG. So we are working with them so that we can start the gazetting process at least between October and November. So I am putting my head on the block in that regard. DG, I think the issue of health promotion, you've covered sugar tax issues, and then et cetera. I think DG, you've covered it very well. And thank you so much. If there's anything, check, please feel free to give us more questions.
Yeah, I just want to just conclude on the issue I forgot to mention was the question of the state's role in this industry and globally is always in terms of price support mechanisms, because of, as I explained, because of, you find global oversupply. So and that is why the tariff, we preserve the tariff a system for this industry. Now, the only issue was there was a mention by Honorable McPherson about the EU and so on. So what we did a few years ago when we renewed the what we call the EPAS, the European Partnership Agreement, we managed to score a significant victory because, as you know, they only allowed the less developed countries like Lesotho and Swaziland, or Lesotho doesn't produce sugar, but Swaziland, to import duty-free into the European Union. And South Africa couldn't because they said we are a developed country, we can't come and export to the EU. So, but we managed to then, in the EPA negotiations, open up a market for our sugar. So they allowed us amount of a quota for sugar in the European Union. So that has been secured. But unfortunately what has happened is, not only has the world price dropped, but the price in Europe has also fallen. So it's also no longer as economically or as profitable to export to the European Union. And that's why you have the Eswatini problem. Because Eswatini used to export into the European Union, but now because the price is so low, they are diverting that into South Africa. So even for us, it is not as profitable to send the goods into the world market or the European market. That is why you have everybody sitting with oversupply in the South African market. I thought it was just important to clarify that we do have the access to the European market, but as I said, the conditions have now changed where, as I said, the price has fallen. And as you know, price is everything for the farmer. That you have to cover your costs and you have to at least make a profit for you to remain in business.
and now because of this price system. And therefore, Honorable McPherson's point about, I don't understand what he means when he says we must regulate for diversification. The state never regulates. That is the market. And the market forces that determine that. All that the state does is to provide, as I said, price support, and it, for example, produces a research and development support, or it develops a marketing support in all societies for the agricultural sector. But for diversification, you don't need a law to tell you that you must diversify into this or that industry. And so it's not the change to the act we're doing. We're working with the industry, just like we've done in autos. We said the industry must move into electric vehicles. They're going to die if they only produce fuel vehicles. The demand for that is falling. So as part of our master plan, you will see. So we do it in every industry, but it's not a magic law we can say to save an industry. It is to work jointly with the industry on a master plan like we're doing now to say, let's work together to see how we diversify this industry. I thought it's just important to clarify.
I'd like just to raise a few points before I actually go on the next round of comments and questions from members. We did actually sit DG on the 28th of this month. We were actually going through our legacy report because we have work which was done before the committee got reconstituted because of the election process. And we actually have tried to make sure that at least we capture status of issues that are before this committee. It will be quite important because I thought, I did actually say for the department and ministry, because I've raised it with the minister to say, Minister, we've got a committee report agreed in terms of work that has been done in a point of a status on how we proceed further. We call it a legacy report. But I thought it was actually going to be very important because I think in the comments of members in reference of anything happening, you know, before this committee has been constituted, it will be a bit challenging on how you manage that. But I think when we finished our discussion as well, I think one noted with concern the decry of our members, well, saying in the report there were things which in our discussion as a committee we did not actually agree properly, and on the basis of that it was a point of saying in the discussion that took place those issues were not actually agreed, basically. So I think the reference, because I want just to be specific of the meeting of the 18th of February. I'm sure you will be able to refer to it on issue relating to legacy, on all issues that would have been raised in that particular meeting. And one was actually thinking, DG, because this legacy report we have agreed upon on the 28th becomes the foundation document for the work of this committee moving forward. And I was actually saying it will be a thing we would have to emphasize, same as I actually raised with the minister to say, DG, this is where we actually have as foundation of our work moving forward. So you'd actually have to, as a department, acknowledge that we have got a report approved by the committee. And on the basis, just as an example of the discussion we're having now, the kind of issues we have on the 18th page of the report, we're talking about the industrial development and challenges in the sugar industry. Points we actually highlight in terms of activities is several meetings with the industry since 2017. We refer to the work of the committee. We also speak to the issue of oversight visit KwaZulu-Natal in January 2018. So which means those issues become quite important for us to recapture as work done by the committee, because we're still the same committee. But in terms of legacy, what you're saying, let's not drop the ball. But the thing which one actually think will be unfortunate, is to have debates and arguments of the previous committee without actually working on what we need to do moving forward. And on my part, I see it as a very problematic issue that the committee have a debate.
Yeah.
We lose time because we actually just shouting at each other. It doesn't make sense. It's completely, well, as a Swazi guy, some words we actually use cannot be used on the official platform. So can I say stupid will be sufficient for us to do that? Because we waste time when the house is banging. So I think reading through key issues we identified, DG, was the tariffs, lack of transformation, and also impact of the health promotion levy. I think those are key points we identified. It's part of our report in the legacy of the sense of work that took place in the committee in the fifth parliament. We are the sixth parliament. We don't want to drop the ball. And further, I think maybe when you look at future work, which we actually identify at that point, we refer monitoring of the review of the Sugar Act, number 9 of 1978, and its regulation to ensure transformation. So I think on that one, just the date puts you at the point where you say 78-2019, we'll need to relook at the foundation of work that brings us here. And on those basis, we would actually say there's work we need to do in that space. We have identified it's quite important. Further on future work, we said in conjunction with the National Treasury and the Department of Health, consideration of the socio-economic impact of the health promotion levy and on the sugar industry as well as broadly agricultural projects. That's one point. There's departments we see partnership with, because those issues cannot actually be dealt with effectively without this committee engaging across what is the responsibility or portfolio in terms of actually making sure that we deal effectively with the issues that actually come in our program. The further point was the monitoring and the implementation of the mitigation measures agreed at the National Economic Development and Labor Council with respect to the implementation of the health promotion levy. The strategic platforms that we know, we respect, we understand, we may not actually complete work as a committee. It may not be a point of this platform actually deciding everything. So they are actually a strategic platform where stakeholders, business, communities, government, have actually an opportunity to help us get this program actually implemented effectively. So it's future work that we're looking at, and we know that is going not going to end here. It's not only this department. And further, on the future work, we say overseeing of the implementation of transformation commitments made by the South African Sugar Association in relation to small black sugar cane growers. So we highlight that point. It's not the only point. We give that as a point which might be important. Further, I think just to conclude on the issue, engaging with the GTI for the purposes of ensuring diversification of the sugarcane value chain, such as ethanol, in order to take advantage of the existing European Union market under the South African Development Community, European Union Economic Partnership Agreement. So we're making a very broad entry because we're not going to the level of detail of issues that we actually have to look at. But I think in terms of the report that you have presented to us, we hope it does create a sufficient space for us to be able to work on what we have identified as key issues, particularly when it comes to the sugar industry, when we're actually taking the process forward. So I thought it was actually quite important that one raises this issue and actually just say, let's start where we end off. But I think on my part, what I would really ask us not to do as a committee is to actually go to a point of a debate that helps us not to move forward. So I'm actually trying to actually pick up on that in a way that one knows and actually raise the issue at the committee, DG, because our interaction and engagement on these issues and what we have actually come and presented to us becomes the foundation of our future work as a committee that's actually instituted currently. So let me actually then go back and check with the member, Honourable Member McPherson. You wanted to make a comment earlier, I stopped you, but I thought this contribution might be quite important so that you know where we're coming from. Montashe, I note your hand. Mbuyane, I note your hand. McPherson?
Thank you very much. I want to again correct a misunderstanding that we don't have to wait 3 years for the tariff to be reviewed. The minister can do that now. He can ask for the review. It can be done tomorrow if he chooses to do so. And it is something that this committee has agreed on already. So, you know, I think we must, you know, stop looking towards, you know, sort of 2 years' time, and we must start putting pressure on the committee, on the minister, as to when that review is going to be asked for, because it is what this committee has agreed to. I want to disagree with page 20's first point, where it says it was agreed that protectionist strategy for the industry needs to be phased out in favour of one based on competitiveness. Now, naturally, by my political orientation, I don't believe in protectionist measures. But the sugar industry is one industry that I believe does deserve protection because it is legislated against to mechanize. And so, you know, if you're going to do away with, you know, with the mechanization, you know, then they can become more competitive. But for as long as that remains, there must be a form of protection for the industry. So I think that would be an exceptionally short-sighted view to take, because if you want to destroy the industry, that is the highway to do so. But it's also, I think, you know, based on a lack of ideas to actually use sensible measures to protect the industry. Now, I've never understood why there are no agreements with industry that there should be an uptake of the local quota first, and then, you know, you can bring in as much as you want after that local quota has been used. And that makes sense. I mean, that is a sensible, logical partnership agreement that can be, I think, forged between industry and farmers. And I'd like to know what the department's views on that are. It is obviously a non-binding agreement, because that would be in violation of our WTO commitments. But I think that it is an agreement that is something that South Africans certainly could get behind, and would fit nicely in some of our Buy South Africa literature that we put out. I want to just correct something, DG, that I didn't say that regulation is required for diversification. What I said is that legislation is required for diversification. And there's a big difference, because what the industry is absolutely looking for is a commitment from government that there will be a clear roadmap for them to make the vast capital investments into ethanol and into cogeneration. And without those legislative mechanisms, there is no there is no commitment from either side to invest in that. But there is absolutely policy need so that they then know what can be done with that ethanol that they create and how then the blending would take place. So I think that what is needed from the department is a policy on the matter, because we know that legislation comes from policy. So we need to settle on a policy platform, and then secondly, we then need to move into a bill or legislation that allows them to do that. And whether that fits neatly into an amendment of the Sugar Act, you need to tell me. But if it can, hence my forthrightness to see that bill or amendment come to the committee. So if you could just answer those questions, I'd be grateful. Thank you.
I thought you would add on the point of the response of the DG and the team on the points you said they were misleading on. Because, you know, I think it will be important so that we don't skip that point, because you did actually say the department is misleading the committee. I don't know what specific points you really wanted to raise. I would like you to be actually more specific so that the DG is able to respond, because if it goes on record that you have misled DG, then it actually creates a problem that on my side I haven't actually followed through, but I think the honorable member should be able to, you know, come back to you to say, DG, I thought you were, but I'm actually comfortable that we're in the same space, or DG, you haven't actually responded to this point and you are still misleading this committee. McPherson?
Well, thank you for that. Because on page 20, the second to last bullet point, it said that the HPL funds were ring-fenced for health promotion by the department. And I said, in fact, that was misleading, and that is a factual point. But what the DG did, and I admit from saying that, is he hadn't clarified that, in fact, that the funds are not ring-fenced and that they are allocated towards the general revenue fund. So the DG did in fact clarify that point. But when that statement was made, that was a non-factual misleading statement. But the DG has since clarified it.
You actually withdraw that point, that you're being misled.
Well, at the time I was being misled.
No, I'm just saying this time.
Well, I will say that the DG has clarified the DG.
Thank you very much. So, because I think those are small issues, if we don't take care of, we may have serious problems just on the bad communication we might have. So can we then actually proceed? I did note Mantashe, Mboyane.
Chairperson, thank you. I wish the DG could go back and explain to the committees the reason why I take care to do the balancing act in increasing the dollar-based reference price, so that it is not pushed to the limit using emotion, but be economical about it, or economic-wise about it. Chairperson, in your summarizing the important issues that you are highlighting, that we think we must look upon, is for us not to exclude the ownership of the mills and participation and entire participation in the entire value chain of black farmers. I want that to be amongst the things that are going to be given preference. Thank you.
Yeah. Chair, thanks. I think also one must be able to be clarified in terms of the membership system, because we will be talking membership system here in a democratic society, which is clearly indicating that one man, one vote. And which criteria are we going to use in terms of the voting of 50-50 while we are not in a democratic South Africa? Chairperson, also we must clarify the diversification part.
It's not that we are saying to the farmers of the sugar they must go and farm with anything else. But we are saying we must diversify, that they use the sugar with other, like biofuels and bioethanol. Not to saying, we are saying, no, they must go and plow mills because we are diversifying. No. We are saying the sugar must be able to diversify to have other commodities that they produce in the process. One other issue here, I think we must definitely check the inquiry. We must have the inquiry on the SASA in terms of the land audit and so forth and so forth. Because I'm told they are selling those farms for housing. You see, and that information must be clarified. But I'm asking the relevant people as a department to be able to clarify. And also the question, when we were in the induction process, we're told that the minister's prerogative in terms of the ITEC review and so forth, and now there's 1 or 3 years agreement that they did. So if we can be clarified so that we know exactly where are we as the department on that note. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Mine is just a point of clarity. I just wanted to know if, just by the way, the Eswatini sugar, with it comes mainly to South Africa, what about the rest of Africa? Because isn't sugar grown in a subtropical area? I'm not sure. I was very bad at geography. Anyway, then I also wanted to know, for the transitional arrangements to be made permanent, or for that process, I wanted to know, does it come back to the portfolio committee, or is it just then an amendment to the agreement that the sugar industry functions on? Thank you, Chair.
DG, I'm sure, we'll be, maybe let me check first, honorable members, if you have any further comments, questions. Honorable Thring.
Chairman, it was just a clarification on the stevia. I didn't hear any comments from on the stevia.
I know you gave us the new term, would like to know more as well. That there's something with more sugar than anything else. I know the sugar cane only. Okay. Okay. DG, floor is yours.
Honourable Chair, and thanks for the guidance, Chair, and the advice. It's well taken. I'll ask Harold maybe just to come in before I come in with you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thanks, DG. But it might be worth just talking a little bit about the master planning process that we're in, which the Minister has asked me to help facilitate together with the industry, because I think it deals with a number of the issues that the Honourable Members have raised. Just want to make the point that, repeat the point that DG made earlier, which is that we're in essentially a sunset industry as far as the use of sugar as a sweetener for human consumption goes. The global price issue is not just a question of oversupply. It's the fact that in markets like India, it's an instrument for social policy. So the price of about $323 per ton on the global market at the moment is a reflection of massive subsidies going into drive rural development in India. On the flip side, I think what we're saying is, look, you have to make reality your friend here. You've got to deal with the reality you're living with. And developing the master plan has got two components. The one is how do you structurally change the conditions for an industry so that it can survive long term? On the other hand, you've also got to deal with the short term pressures. And so the process we're in is engaging with the industry around those questions, and I'll come to a number of the specific questions on that. I think what's also really important to recognize, though, is that there are a bunch of issues internal to South Africa that are also a massive challenge. So, for example, our mills are only running at 64% capacity utilization. So notions of bringing new mills into production in a context where there's spare capacity, and that spare capacity, 85% of the cost is a fixed cost, not a variable cost, means that you're actually going to make it even more difficult to pull the productivity and the efficiencies and the competitiveness out of our milling process. I think what we are seeing, though, as far as smaller black farmers in particular are concerned, is that structurally they sit further away from mills. So the logistics costs are a very significant reason as to why they're actually running at sub-economic levels, even with the protection of the price, with the dollar-based reference price. But there's already work going on in the industry where big efforts are being made to address that question, because we've had distortions with the way transport subsidies are being applied, where mills are fighting amongst each other to get capacity in to be processed, which means that we're now getting sugar being brought or cane being brought from long distances away from mills at subsidized prices, when in fact if we just change the logistics structure in a way where, for example, farmers in the Makatini Flats could deliver their cane to a railhead from Transnet much closer to where they are, suddenly their logistics costs drop by nearly 75%. And so there's some work going on in that space to try and deal with the short-term issues. Talking a bit about the diversification, I think let's not, you know, certainly two of the big millers, both Tongaat Hulett and Illovo, have in fact been diversifying. The problem with Tongaat Hulett is they became property developers and we ended up with the stuff the DG spoke to. With the new leadership in place, a new CEO, etc., they're shifting that and now beginning to look at other forms of diversification. Illovo has already started to diversify. All right, a very significant, in fact, the only profitable part of their business at the moment is in something called furfural, which is a chemical derivative of sugar which goes into industrial solvents and paints, etc. And they've made very significant in that they're selling ethanol into the European market, the Russian market, into the Asian market, going into this global spirits industry. So there's already quite significant diversification happening. What's very clear is that there are more opportunities. So some of the off-takers, for example, you know, the beverage players, which is where the HBL actually applies, have made commitments to start supporting the development of bioplastics as an alternative to the PET or to in the use of PET for the plastic bottles, right? So those of you who drink that the fancy bottled water Valpre will notice that on the bottle, it talks about the plant bottle, it's 30% made from sugar. That sugar, by the way, is grown in Brazil, processed in India, and then blended into the PET resin in South Africa. But there's there is an opportunity that we're working on as part of the process that Umisa spoke about very quickly to try and understand how much more can we do around essentially a sugar-based plastic as an alternative. The same on the bioethanol, and to I think assure some of the honourable members that you know the cogen issue is an opportunity. We're working with ESCOM and the Department of Energy to make sure that the regulatory environment enables that to happen where it's rational. So there's very urgent work going, and I've been personally quite encouraged in my engagements with across the value chain, and I'm meeting with growers in SAFTA and SASA tomorrow in Durban again about the commitment to kind of diversifying the downstream. Because I think where the honourable members are correct is we've got to be careful about saying we're going to grow something else. The great thing about sugarcane is it's a weed, effectively. You know, it is hardy, it can grow in an environment which is very poor environmentally. People don't steal it. With high-value crops like macadamia nuts, a farmer loses half of the crop along the way. So the solution is really about diversifying what you can do with the sugar. The other caution I want to make is just on the non-nutritive sweetness. Sorry to disturb you. I was just saying that for those small companies, those who are even outside the farmer milling part, I'm not sure if ever there is actually encouragement of participation, because the other point one is looking at is those who are already part of the sector that might actually be working on all the different issues. Are we encouraging those who are outside the sector to be able to participate? So I think it's quite an important point, because
you might find that in the capacity you have, you can be able to grow it and get more participation into the sector from those who may be actually interested to actually participate. Because I think it might be an important point to work on that, because internally there is a particular capacity, but we can actually grow that as well and encourage others to participate.
And Chair, I think through you, the point is very important, because I think there's a number of things that, I mean, this may be a controversial point, but I think the tariff wall that we've created has also had some adverse consequences for us, because it's taken away the reason for the industry to feel the pressure to do things differently to some extent. And so, for example, the Eswatini sugar, if you look at a lot of what's coming in from Eswatini, is coming in the form of packaged no-name brand sugar that's going into retail. And so, in fact, most of the no-name brands, you know, the Checkers Pick and Pay sugar, is actually coming from Eswatini. It's a function of the fact that our industry didn't think it was important to compete for that. There are some of the millers who, for example, are exporting into SADC with some value-added products, a slightly different package. They can earn a couple of more U.S. cents per ton on the sugar than they do if we just sell it on the global market out of Durban as bulk sugar. And back in about 10 years ago, some work was done at the Department of Agriculture around the then ASGISA process, where actually if we wanted to blend just 10% bioethanol into the fuel, we would require 19 million tons of cane to support that. Now, that's what we produce in this year, 19 million tons of sugar cane in total. So if you can imagine the size of the opportunity, if we can make the economics work. But it's going to take new investment. It's going to possibly take some need for competitors to start collaborating and investing in some of this new production capability, and the new instruments in the Competition Amendment Act that allow for some exemptions are going to be potentially very useful instruments. Two last things I wanted to comment on. So the non-nutritive sweetener space is one that we can get very excited about. You know, the stevias and the aspartames and the xylitols, etc. Now, xylitol is actually made from sugar, but by the way, it's a waste product. Yeah. But it's a waste product also coming out of the paper milling process. So at the moment, the C6 sugars that get used to make xylitol are being pumped as waste into the Durban harbor by Mondi. And you can make xylitol much more cheaply from paper processing than you can from sugar processing. So and then there's also the issue around the Department of Health is raising concerns around the fact that just substituting one sweetener for another just keeps the addiction to sweetness going. The most important point, and DG made this point, price is everything. Whether you fiddle with the HPL or whether you mess with a reference price, the reality is the biggest sugar off-taker in this country is actually bound to buying sugar from South Africa only under because of the merger agreement around CCBA, that process. So they can only import cheaper sugar under very restrictive circumstances, and that was part of what happened when we had that window that opened up where there was no tariff protection. My point is this. The products that sugar sits in that are so price elastic that if you could raise the tariff barrier, the on-cost goes straight into the downstream users, and the immediate response to which is if they try and pass it on to the consumer, demand drops. Or what happens is what's actually been happening. It's not that people are buying less Coke, okay, or Pepsi. The producers, the downstream producers, in the, particularly the beverage companies, are reformulating their products. It's not, yes, you know, Coke Zero, its volume has increased by about 50%. The reality is that the sugar-sweetened beverages have got less sugar in them. They're fiddling with the revenues to reduce the tax burden. And that's where it's going to drive it. So whether you push the price up through a levy or you buy it through a tariff, in an environment where they can't go and buy cheap sugar for half the price in the international market, we're still going to have this, we're going to in fact accelerate the outcome. And that's the balancing act that I think the Honourable Member referred to, that we have to watch this thing very carefully. The most important thing is how do we take those 20,000 small-scale growers, who used to be 40,000, by the way, 10 years ago, what do we do in the short run to keep them in business
through mechanisms like dealing with logistics costs, by farmer support from the Department of Rural Development, and then come with this diversification plan as quickly as we can. And that's the process that the master planning thing is trying to do. We're working. We've got a four-week deadline to come up with a framework in which we can start get tracking on this thing. And obviously a lot of work has to go into the numbers, because previously the biofuels numbers didn't work out as commercially viable. But there may be some opportunities to improve that, and the team is working very hard on that. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, thanks. As you can see why I leave the difficult questions for the team, because they can clarify very well the issue. So I think that's now clear. Then just to respond very briefly to just the outstanding, I think, Honourable Max Pearson, thanks for that clarity. I think I understand you very well now for what you meant by giving certainty, and I fully agree with you that, and as I said, was mentioned now by Harold, is that the industry needs certainty about biofuels and the blending requirements for them to make the investment in biofuel. And secondly, they do need certainty from Eskom with regards to wheeling agreements and other things with regards to cogeneration. As I said, the only information we can give is that, unfortunately, that jurisdiction around blending or how much fuel you put into the, let's say, the fuel grid, is falls squarely under the Minister of Energy. And no matter what you do, the Sugar Act doesn't have, our minister doesn't just have the jurisdiction to make any regulations with regards to energy. So that's why I think, but I take the point. But and we've been working for almost as long as I've been in the department, 18, 19 years, we've been fighting for this thing of a fuel, for biofuel industry. As I said, unfortunately, it's expensive. It needs to be subsidized for you to start a biofuel industry. And as I said, we constantly, there is a decision made that we don't have the money to do that. But as I said, Brazil, as soon as the oil price went up in the 70s for oil, Brazil saw an opportunity and they heavily subsidized the creation of a biofuel industry. And that is why today they are competitive. So if I can clue then on the question of the tariffs, as I said, it is a very, very complex matter, the question of tariff setting. And as I said, Honourable McPherson asked about the minister's powers. So as you know, we've got a Trade Administration Act which regulates the functions of the administration, ITAC, and the powers of the minister. So the minister gets the ITAC, which has an independent board, they will make recommendations to the minister on any tariff matter. The minister has no exclusive powers to determine or to set a tariff in this country. It will be unconstitutional. What he then has is he gets a recommendation either to raise the tariff. He can only make one of two choices. He must accept or reject the recommendation. He can't, for example, say, no, you're only raising the tariff by 20%. I would like it to be 30%. Once he gets the recommendation from ITAC, he has only two choices. He must either make the decision, I'm going to accept it, then he passes on to the Minister of Finance, who passes on to SARS, who institutes the new tariff. Alternatively, he must send it back to them and thinks, I think I disagree with you. And as the Minister explained in his budget vote, and I think he put it very, he says, when I have to make that decision about accepting or rejection, I can either hurt the industry, or I can at least let this industry survive for a while. If the tariff is too high, the demand falls and you in any case kill the industry. Because as Harold mentioned, is because of the price sensitivity of demand, if you raise the price just too much, people cut on that product, or the industry itself for their own survival, Coke will recalibrate its sugar intake and so on. So it's a blunt instrument, and as I said, and they did, after the representation from both black and farmers, when they came to Parliament here 2 years ago or so, we
we did take the industry and then they came up with a price. And they created that mechanism for 3 years and so on. But as I said, but the point we're making about, again, competitiveness and we have to stop relying on protection, I think that has been, and the minister again put that very well. As I said, because we were isolated under apartheid, the entire industry survived on 100% tariffs in this country. And that's the reason we are such an uncompetitive country, because our prices are above the world prices, because they've enjoyed this cushion. And therefore you can't sell any product abroad because everybody in the world gets it cheaper because the companies were forced to trade competitively. So we have to get this message across. You cannot base your business strategy on tariff protection. So you have to become globally competitive. You must invest in diversification, in R&D, in competitiveness and so on. But as I said, the fortunate thing now is that because of the push from the committee, we now have a similar situation. And this is what we call the reimagined industrial strategy. The lessons we learned from Auto, which we've been working with for 20 years on a master plan, we now have this, and that's why we've brought in the experts. So we are collaborating jointly. The master plan doesn't belong to government. It's a tripartite arrangement. So we are now working together. So hopefully we are wanting to build a competitive industry, but it has to take into account the complexities. Then Honorable Mantashe and Honorable Bobuyani, especially, as I said, we've put our recommendations on how to deal with this issue of transformation and how to deal with it, institutionalize it in the sugar agreement and in the SASA constitution. But as I said, we'll come back to you by the end of September, by the end of this month, to say how exactly the formula we're going to use. But as I said, it is a very complex matter because, as I said, the industry's been living on, since the 1870s, they've been working on this formula of tonnage to determine membership. You know, we don't have one farmer, one vote in this country. You have tonnage. So big farmers have a disproportionate amount of the vote. And so on. So we will have to work out how we can recalibrate the. But as I said, it's not again in the Sugar Act; it's in the SASA Constitution, and that's why that is the thing we have to look at. And Honourable Mantashe, I think you're absolutely correct that, and I think the chair made the point. This is not the first time we're debating this matter. This matter has been you've been seized with for the past 2 years, and we are implementing. As we go along, and as you can see now, both the ministers are now also active in the process. We've created a proper master plan process, so that I think this time we're going to develop not a response for 1 year, 2 years, just to the crisis. As you can hear, we are looking at a long-term plan for this industry to put it on a different footing. And I'm competent. We've got both the business skills in this country. We do have the farmers are productive, and now if you've got an engaged government, if we can apply the lessons that we've learned in the autos, we apply it to all the other sectors now, I think that this industry, we can take it into a different position.
I will, for members, request that if ever you've got comments, questions, because I'll take it as Russ, I've marked your hands, McPherson. Are there other comments from members? Buyane? Tring, Honorable? I think the answer was covered. Okay. Unless there are no other ends, I'll take the two. It will round up the discussion, DG. McPherson?
So, I mean, the DG is completely right when he says that the minister doesn't have the constitutional right and law to set tariffs, but he does have every right to make an application for a review within the three-year period, and that's the point that I think must be looked at. But I mean, I actually walk away here probably more depressed than when I arrived, DG, because you're saying to the industry effectively, you know, don't rely on tariff protections, diversify, but we can't help you in that diversification because for 20 years we've tried and nothing's been done. You also say become more cost competitive but continue to pay the health promotion levy because that's finances baby, not ours. And it's somewhat of a fatalistic approach in that everyone else's future relies on another ministry. And, I mean, by your own admission, and I know how hard it is to get stuff done in other departments, but for 18 years you've tried to do this and haven't been able to succeed. And so what is the message we're sending to the industry, you know, from this meeting? And to me it sounds like you're on your own. Diversify, but we can't help you. Cut your costs because we can't do so. And that's a real shame, to be honest, because I'll start with what I said earlier. Transformation will not and cannot happen when there is no industry to transform. And that's the Autobahn highway that we are headed towards. That's the feeling that I walk out of this meeting in. And that's why I think to my colleagues that it is absolutely critical that if the DG and the department is not able to achieve the wins on the health promotion levy and on the diversification, it then falls up to us to use the legislative instruments that are within our powers to do so. Because we can't wait another 18 years with respect, DG, and I don't know if you'll be on retirement then or moved on somewhere else, but we need to achieve those wins. In the very, very short future. And I think, Chair, that's something that we as a committee need to deliberate on and need to discuss what extent we are prepared to go towards to see a moratorium on the health promotion levy and to see legislation enacted that brings about the ability to diversify, to go generate, and to see ethanol into the system. Because the fact of the matter is, if there's 30,000 sugarcane farmers, they all should be independent power producers or should have the ability to do so. They all should be know that there are other options for them, and farming macadamias doesn't have to be, you know, the option. Because like I said earlier, a dairy farmer is a dairy farmer because they love dairy. They don't want to farm chickens or goats. And I know because my grandfather, you know, liked being a dairy farmer. And it's also, you know, about where they come from in that particular climate and geographic region of South Africa. So it really becomes up to us, and Chair, and I think that we need to look at a way going forward to make those things happen.
I thought you would be able to say what's to be done, because I'm sure it's actually questions. It will be important, I think, when we move ahead to DG, because one is actually saying we've seen the summary of your way forward. That's the entry point, and I'm sure with the comment it's quite important that we will speak more to that so that we can actually help build the kind of approach that helps us to agree or understand what is it that we need to do in terms of what we actually aspire to look at. So I did note three hands. Oh, you want to finish?
Yes. So, I mean, just on a way forward, and I think that's an important point. So I think on a way forward, I think that we should be, as a committee, calling for a moratorium on the health promotion levy. We should also be engaging a joint committee with the Minister of Finance with respect to the health promotion levy, and when it comes to diversification, we should be having a joint committee meeting with the Minister of Trade and Industry and Minister of Energy, so we can, you know, button these things down once and for all. So those would be my recommendations going forward.
So I think the idea, DG, when I actually am raising the comment, it's more or less what the member is raising. But I think it's because we're just generally commenting, which is quite important, just because we should respond in how we receive your report. Because it's quite important that we're able to actually work on our next step. So I saw Cuthbert raising the point. I'm not sure, because you raised it quickly when I'm noting Mantashe and Mbuyane before I close. Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. It's just maybe a comment. I've sat here rather quietly today because I was learning about, you know, the challenges in the sugar industry, and it's been very interesting thus far. But what I find to be a recurring theme across a number of issues we face is that there are a lot of interdepartmental linkages, and there's a lack of cooperative governance when it comes to dealing with certain issues. So what my suggestion would be is that we sit as a committee and see where we have these interdependencies amongst ourselves, and then we make it our business to deal with those issues one by one. I mean, we look at the issues that we have with the Employment and Labour Ministry as well, where we'd like to take that forward. And I think it's important that we do this going forward, because this is a good way in which the institutional arrangements and the governance arrangements can be carried out going forward. It doesn't help for people to work in silos, because it's quite easy to place the blame on another department, but we haven't actually made the initiating step to try and come to some sort of solution. So that's just my 2 cents for today. Thank you, Chair.
Mantashe?
Chair, I hear what Honourable McPherson is saying, but for us as the ANC, we don't have such a directive from our caucus for us to say we must put a moratorium on the sugar tax, because that was a decision of the African National Congress. So we will have to go back. So we, for now, we are no part of that thing.
The committee, DG, is mistaken. They think they won't discuss after this. So, but I think the reality of the situation is that this is the input you gave to us. Just looking quickly, we look at what the DG put as way forward as a starting point on how we engage. There are areas we can refer to as well, DG, to be able to say as a committee at the level where we actually we make entry on this matter and what the department has raised, what is it that we would be able to do moving forward. Mbuyane, you wanted to raise a point, and you didn't have a hand up? Covered, okay. Mbuyane?
Chair, thanks. I think I wanted a few clarification from the advisor, an advisor from the minister. Spoke of Ilovo. I'm not so sure, because if we talk of Ilovo, there's any transformation that is happening on Ilovo. Because he spoke of diversification in Ilovo that is happening now. How are our black people benefiting on that diversification in Ilovo? And also, I wanted to check as to, because there are some farmers which they are farming area in the communities where. I just wanted to check whether those communities are benefit. They are not farmers, they are not farming, but are they benefiting around, because those farms are around where they stay. So I just wanted to check that. Thank you very much.
Hermans was covered, DG. Mbuyane has just made the comment. I would like you to be the last person to try and round up, and then we'll actually look at the way forward on the issue. Thank you. DG?
Thanks for that, and as I said, thanks for the guidance and the views. As I said, it's very helpful, and especially that you put this issue of the sugar industry so early on the program. Really, we appreciate that, and we can rely on your support. So the way forward is that, as we indicated, we will finalize the amendments of the sugar industry as per your previous legacy report. We'll finalize the amendments of the sugar industry agreement in the SASA constitution and so on. And hopefully, as I said, we will be able to report at the end of this month even on those issues and give you guidance on exactly the direction we're going to take with that. Then, as I said, we because our deadline there is the 31st of March 2020, but we hope to tie it up at least definitely before year end, so that there's absolute clarity around the sugar agreement, the sugar agreement and the SASA constitution. Then the next timeline is we're finalizing the diversification plan by March 2020 and to commence then implementation April 2020. So the one thing I was saying about the industry, why we are hopeful, is because at the start, the sixth administration is the first administration that have immediately adopted the reimagined industrial plan, which means now we've got master plans for 13 industries. And sugar is one of them that we've prioritized. So I'm happy now that we don't have that problem of working in silos as in previous years now. We are directly, the master plan process, it's based on empirical investigation. We're sitting down now with Department of Energy, with Department of Agriculture. We even have joint meetings with the Minister of Agriculture and so on. So we've hit the sixth administration very well, and now we were going to repeat, as I said, the secret of the auto industry was the arrangement between government and industry working as one. We now at that point now, and also based on actual empirical information, so that we don't just rush for these things, protection, all these things. We actually look at the long term of the industry, where it's going, what are the trends, how do we make it competitive, and then and that process has already started. As I said, it started 1 week after the minister came into office. So we are hitting the ground running in the sixth administration with regards to these new industries and our reimagined industrial plan. So we'll have that. Usually, as you know, in the auto industry, we take 3-4 years to do a master plan. We've got instructions from the president and the minister. We have to do all these master plans within 12 months. But in our DTI, we think deadlines, clothing and textile, we'll have in the next month or so. And then, as I said, even in sugar, they've given the 4-week deadline for us to have at least an interim plan and a full plan by the new financial year. So that's April 20 for diversification. And then, as I said, we do now have an interdepartmental team, as Honorable McPherson was raising, the silo problem of before, and is that there's an interdepartmental task team. We're sitting down with DAF and energy, and also we brought in Industrial Development Corporation, and we've brought in CSIR. So as I said, we do have, as I said, we are now more systematic and interventionist, as the industrial policy calls for. We're now intervening directly, but as I said, always collaborating with the private sector to grow this sector. Thank you, Chair.
Let me just say maybe the point which will be still important to accommodate, it will be at the point of the legislation or the Sugar Act. I think in the discussion we had, we just said with the gap of the environment, you know, I'm just saying, because the situation we had at 1978 would be slightly different than what we have now. You actually effectively using the two opportunities or space in terms of the sugar industry agreement and also the issue of the SASA constitution. We have no issue. You would find you actually would have even more elaborate space where we actually can be able to, you know, cover the sector. If we also look at what is it in terms of legislation that can actually be looked at to improve the space, because obviously when you look at what we had when this legislation was pronounced and where we are now, we think there might be an opportunity for more cushion or more areas where there can be more space to get things done more efficiently, more better. So I'm just saying, it's not a point of saying the two areas of agreement and constitution is insufficient. The point raised is to say it may be even much better, more balanced, if we also have a look at the legislation as well, because just on the timing, it does actually show the environment is completely different. maybe there is an opportunity to look at that. So I think that's a point which I thought, let me just raise, DG, on our part, in terms of what you presented on the way forward. We actually comfortable to start from there. But what we wanted to do as well is that introducing the legacy report, we want actually just to be sure that in terms of industry, on our report, it's page 18 of our report, which talks about activities and key issues. And the other one is page 19 and 20, which looks at future work. It will be very helpful to get the work of the department at the point where we say we are creating a sufficient space to be able to engage on the summary of issues we have identified for future plans. So for what we have actually just reported to us in terms of the way forward, we acknowledge, we accept that we're quite comfortable as a committee. But further, we think in terms of our report, which we refer to as overview of the portfolio committee on the economic development and on trade and industry. Remember, it's two departments we're looking at. So that's the title of our program on legacy reports. So we would say it will be very important that on page 18, 19, and 20, which actually cover the issue of the industrial development challenges in the industry, sugar industry, might be actually an entry point. So we might actually develop something that will actually help us develop a program where we actually have that interaction, because I think the point which is obvious now, that you will be able to update us, and fortunately you say you can do some of the updates in a month's time, which we really appreciate, that at least you can be able to actually say, with what I see as the summary of the legacy report on this issue specifically, there is actually an opportunity for us to do the following moving forward. So I thought maybe we would actually conclude in that way, because on my part, I think we should be able to accept the vision. You know, you referred to our former president, Nelson Mandela. Vision for action, we really support that. But for the rest of the other stuff, there might be more work that you need to do. But for this one, we want to say we are in full agreement with you with that statement. So, DJ, let me actually allow you to take the final comment, because I'm raising new issues as well. But we're looking at the way forward from now on.
I think I thank you for the, I think 100% with your summary, and we'll take that as the way forward. I just wanted to just clarify the issue of the legislation which you said, and so that we don't, it's not like you gave us a, that issue, I think what we will do is we will maybe share with you and the committee the act itself, the constitution, and the sugar agreement. The only reason I'm raising the issue of the act, because as you would know, and as Honourable McPherson says, in terms of the general position of the political parties or Free Market Foundation, Institute of Race Relations, all of them would want to abolish that legislation. Because as you know, it's the only surviving one. Because as you know, for the ostrich industry, the wheat industry, because they believe the free market must operate, we mustn't have regulations for private sector. So the general position is, our liberal position as a country is that we must dissolve these legislations. So that's why as DTI, because we adopted industrial policy, we've said that every piece of legislation that was existed under apartheid doesn't mean it was bad. The problem with that legislation was that it only catered for 10% of the population. But we need that Sugar Act to continue, and we need that Sugar Act to be extended to other agricultural sectors as well. So when we say we don't want to amend it, I'm all just saying is you're going to get a flurry from the Free Market Foundation and Institute of Relations. And as I said, but I'm happy this committee and everybody has says let's continue to support the industry, let's continue to have protection for the industry whilst we get it into the diversification. But I just wanted to clarify why we're not coming with amendments all the time. But as I said, the main thing to help the industry is to amend the agreement and the thing, but you can look at yourself if you want anything else to improve on. I'm happy. Yeah, but
No, DG, I think it does cover my point very well. Thanks very much. So I think for the discussion, maybe we should actually go to program, because I think with the comment that DG has made, we're concluding the discussion. And thank you very much. We would actually then just take a last point on our agenda before we open the door for us to go out, DG. So you can sit and so that we actually don't feel like we're throwing you out immediately. We'll actually have to look at the program because it does actually impact on the work of the department as well. Andre?
I needed to step out for a moment, but I asked about the transitional arrangements becoming permanent. Getting it into a permanent arrangement, the transformation of the industry, whether we're going to get another bite at it, whether it's coming back to the portfolio committee. Maybe I missed it when I had to step out.
No, it's what we agreed upon. When you stepped out, we agreed that we will work on a program on when we'll get the next report as a committee. Yeah, we have done that. So sorry you missed that. I thought I'll tell you when we have lunch. Yeah. Okay.
Members, a new program was distributed just to highlight a few changes to the program. As you note, the chair has announced this morning that there will be a report on the National Credit Amendment Act as well, including the CS. That was added to the 10th. The item that was deleted or removed and will be replaced to next quarter was the issue of the NCC commissioner. That will probably be rescheduled for the third quarter. With regard to the 17th of September, originally we were scheduled to engage on the SABS and NRCS annual report. We were informed that those reports have not yet been tabled, so it makes it actually impossible. So we will also reschedule that for the 8th or the 9th of October. But we'll probably bring a revised program for the next quarter, most likely next week, to the committee for consideration when all these changes, those items that were originally scheduled on the program that has fall off the program, like the public protector issue, which will technically be rescheduled in October as well. So hopefully the next week, Tuesday, we will have a revised program for the last quarter of this year. But for this quarter, this will be the program. Another matter, Chair, I think we need to share is that, remember last week, the members agreed that they will have training on a Friday, the 20th, on the industrial policy. Professor Black has indicated he's not available on that particular day because of other commitments. So we are engaging Professor Black to reschedule that training probably in October, most likely on a Friday, which most likely is his free day. So we hopefully will have an answer for the committee maybe next week on the matter.
Can I just say, on the circulated program, I think, DG, they did give you a copy as well. They have. So I think we're looking at Tuesday, 10th September. It's E249. It's 9:30 to 1. Two issues. Is the briefing on the DTI, on the South African Automotive Industry Master Plan. So on that one, it looks different than what we just discussed as sugar industry. I'm just saying it's actually a sign of success and progress that we're able to make. It's quite important. The second part will be the briefing on the DTI, National Credit Amendment Act, including the CS report, and process in terms of proposal. Can we then say this will be then our program as a committee? But thanks very much, I think, for the DG to also note. And can we then conclude our meeting? Thank you very much, honourable members and visitors we had in the room. Thank you.